You're listening to Decoding the Code, the podcast for developers. Together with fantastic guest speakers, we explore coding myths, discover helpful tips for beginners and experts alike, and get a peek behind the digital curtains. Get ready for your host, Mark Backus.
Hello and welcome everyone to Decoding the Code. Today I'm here with Jos Gerards. He is head of events at Vue.js Amsterdam, and today we're going to talk with him about the organization of tech events such as Vue.js Amsterdam. Hello Jos, how are you doing?
Hey Mark, very well. Thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm great, thank you, thank you. So yes, I met you in 2020 at Vue.js Amsterdam. It's the first time I went to a bigger tech conference. And I was such a big fan of the whole thing, the whole event. And I think you know this because you reached out to me afterwards, a couple of weeks, a month afterwards, to get in touch because I liked it so much. So I wanted, with this talk, I wanted to expose like the whole tech event thing to my audience, because when you go to a conference, you just go there, you register, you get your badge, you get the food, you go to the conferences, you talk to people, and then you go home. But there's a lot of stuff probably going on before, during, behind the scenes, and also afterwards. And I want to shed a little bit of light to all of that. But I would want to know a little bit more about yourself and your journey with tech conferences before we start going there. So for how long have you been doing this?
I started with this company in 2016, if I'm completely correct. That's when I just moved to Amsterdam. My girlfriend was living here, and she had she wanted to settle in here for her future career. And then I said, like, gonna drop everything. I'm gonna come to Amsterdam. And that's how I started within this current company, actually.
Okay, so you founded Vue.js Amsterdam?
No, I didn't found it. I was one of the first employees back then when I started. Actually, back then we still did a lot of meetups for the community. Okay. So I was more of a community manager, to be honest, when I just started organizing a lot of meetups in the city of Amsterdam. And there I did weekly meetups for companies throughout the whole country. So as well as in Amsterdam, as in Rotterdam, as in The Hague. We did JavaScript meetups mainly, actually.
Okay, nice. And how did you enter the field? Like, what did you study, and how did you enter? Like, did you always say, okay, I want to be an event organizer, or?
No, actually, I was. I have been in hospitality since I'm 16. Okay. And there, I grew to more like in. Party manager, if that is how you can name it. You know, I was I was guiding the people on the floor, making sure that everything was executed following plan. That's what I did for a long, long time. And eventually I worked my last years in a restaurant of a friend of mine. One day I was like, I need to get out of hospitality. This is not what I want to do anymore. I don't want to work. I don't work the holidays anymore. I don't want to work the late hours anymore. It was like day in, day out that I started at 2 o'clock in the afternoon was done at 10 o'clock in the evening. So I was like, I need to get out of this. I want an office job, and that is exactly what I did. And then weirdly enough, I became a community manager, which had very little to do with what I do now. In a sense, it's still the same, but then we started organizing conferences. So we said our meetups are becoming this big. We did meetups at a certain point for Deutsche Bank, ING, for 350 people. So we were like, okay, this is not really a meetup anymore. And we were getting more and more requests for bigger meetups, as this is what you would like to call them. And also from companies' sides that were like, okay, we see the success here. Isn't there something you want to organize, or aren't there conferences you want to organize? And that's actually how we kicked off with our very tiny team organizing conferences. So to come back to your last question, actually, I didn't found it. Luke Thomas is the founder of the company, but I was always on the first row when it came to like founding, be one of the founding employees.
Okay, nice.
And then, weirdly enough, I'm actually back in hospitality again, but not in the traditional way. More in a desk organization. And then three days out of the 12-week planning, I'm actually working my old hospitality hours.
Which tech conferences have you organized? I just know about the Vue.js, MCDM, Vue.js, Global, JS World, Frontend, Love. Okay. But they are all under the same umbrella. Are there any more I missed?
Yeah, we also did React Live. And React Live we did in September 2019. And also in Theater Amsterdam. We have done Angular NL 2 years in a row. We did the Vue.js road trips. So when we founded in 2018, Vue was super new, of course. So even the whole core team, we developed a very close bond with them. And then we said, like, we would like to spread the love for Vue. And secretly, we also wanted to travel. So it was killing two birds with one stone, of course. We want to spread the love for Vue. And we're going to bring it to Paris, Barcelona, and Berlin. And that is what we did. So we basically traveled with the majority of, or not the majority, but we traveled with several core team members through Europe for 2 or 3 years. Yeah, we would like to get back to it, of course, when everything is post-COVID.
That sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we have been in a very unique situation. Developing such a close bond with our speakers.
Yeah.
And yeah, amazing memories there. I cannot tell differently. I think for the people where we have organized it for, as well as for ourselves, what we have built.
Now, moving away a little bit from your story and moving a little bit into like your tasks. So as I mentioned, it's very different experience from organizing it and experiencing it. But what is the process of like organizing an event such as Vue.js Amsterdam? Quick question, like how many visitors do you have in the physical events in 2020? Like how many?
We sold out and we built extra seats last year. So last year we had every day, let me check, 1,250 people.
1,250 people. So yeah, you have to organize everything for 1,250 people. But how does it even start? Like going from, you first have to like find the topic. I think that's like, okay, yeah, we are going to do a Vue one. And then, and then you have to pick a date. How long in advance do you pick a date to start planning the rest?
A year in advance. We start planning out our first steps. So usually a year in advance, we know our next date already, or at least not longer than a month later. We already know our date when we want to organize it and what we would like to organize. But that's very baby step way of thinking.
Okay, and once you have the date, what's the next thing on the list?
I think it's making sure that we have like a preliminary idea of what is going to happen and with whom. Of course, you cannot work this out in great detail yet, but usually before we start, we already have an idea. Like we are going to organize Vue.js Amsterdam. We're going to do it on these and these dates in February. In 2020 or 2021, and we're gonna have these 10 speakers already on the lineup, and we know usually from experience, of course, or from their past talks what the topic direction will be and what they will talk about.
Okay.
And from there, of course, we have more opportunities via call for papers, so more people can join the stage. But I think that is what we usually do to really book out an idea of what is going to happen. and when we're going to organize it.
Okay, and how, like how you said, like you send a call for papers. Like how long more or less before the event those are sent out? Like when you see, like probably, oh, we don't have enough of the core team members yet, and the usual suspects yet. Yeah. But how long in advance you say, like, okay, we need more speakers, and you send out those call for papers?
Well, it's actually we keep seats or we keep speaker seats available. It's
okay.
We're in a very luxurious position that we don't have the problem of filling up a program. We usually have program spaces too little. So every year it happens to us that we actually have too many speakers for a lineup. And then we need to work it out how we're going to squeeze them in anyway. But we're getting better and better year by year. So we really have dedicated speaker slots. And next to that, we usually have all the other slots already filled up with, like, our wanted speaker list is longer than we could process. Anyway,
yeah.
But luckily enough, we also have a lot of speakers that like to speak at our conferences. So no, we don't really struggle to fill up the seats. But I would say 3 months in advance, we really have a rock solid idea of what everything is going to be, or who exactly is going to speak, and usually also what are they all going to talk about. And that's also when we start finalizing details for attendees, make sure that they are informed about program, make sure that they are informed about exact timings, because a lot of people need to travel, of course. About 50% is from the Netherlands and about 50% is from the rest of the world, with a vast majority from Europe, but also still a big chunk out of Europe. So all of these people need to plan their trips. And you usually see that about half a year in advance, they start booking off their days, but you see 3 months in advance that our email inboxes start to fill up with questions regarding more detailed schedules. Are there going to be workshops? These kind of things. To dive a little bit deeper into when the rest of the organization takes place, that's usually, I would say, 7 months before, 8 months before we really have a better understanding of what is going to take place at the theater. And then I would say four or five months in advance, we really start putting cherries on cakes, where we say, like, okay, this is the food we're going to serve, this is how we're going to process the people, this is how it's going to take place.
Yeah, like the whole, you mentioned now the food, like I imagine it's a big enterprise to organize that. I don't know if you're also taking part of that organization, but like you need to provide enough food, you need to provide a variation of food, because there are people eat and don't eat a lot of different foods. And also, like, the small details. I remember when I went to VueJS Amsterdam 2020, you entered, you registered, you got your badge. And then there was like a stand of like donuts. You could just get a donut, like those little things. Who organizes that? Is it also you, like saying, "Oh yeah, we need some like little snacks," or how does it work?
Well, we indeed, or I'm indeed deciding together with the team, of course, what is going to be served. So usually we say, like, when people come in, we feel like they should have a snack in the morning. We feel like they should be able to grab a coffee and a tea included in their ticketing, and then we discuss our coffee break ideas and our lunch break ideas. But then the actual serving, of course, happens via the theater, and they also make the proposals. So they always come up with fun ideas and fun stuff we can do. Yeah, they usually provide us a list, and we are like, okay, this is the budget. Let's pick these three items. We usually also have the benchmark figures already in mind of, if we have 1,250 people, this percentage we should serve in the morning with food. So yeah, okay. That's indeed up to us what people are getting served.
Yeah, and like when people start rolling in, like, to the city, and they start interacting with, like, oh yeah, I'm traveling to Amsterdam for VueJS Amsterdam, and tagging the account. And there's always a response, at least for me, which is also part of the experience for a attendee. Do you have people on purpose being there ready for those kind of reactions?
That would be the most, that would be the most ideal situation, but in reality shows us that that's not always the case. We do have more people that have access to the same account. So we usually have four or five people that have access to the same account. So we, the rule is if you see a question, pick it up and then make sure that people are felt at home. And I think that is, I think that's what makes your stay a lot more comfortable indeed, if you feel like you're looked after and not just visited and then sent home with a thank you note in your suitcase. But I do feel indeed that's maybe where the difference starts a little bit, is where that we have that the people aspect is really central for visiting our events. And I think that's what also for me, that's very important, and that's what's close to my heart, of course, that people are looked after when they come to our conferences.
Yeah, then you're doing a great job, because I felt very welcomed when I got there from the beginning to the end, and even afterwards. Yes, but another thing I wanted to ask you is sponsorship. For how long in advance you have to start looking? Because I imagine especially physical events are very expensive, like the venue, the food, the everything, like personnel. Like how do you go about that? Like you probably have to go there very early to the sponsors, or do you already have sponsors that are usually lined up, like View Mastery? Are usually sponsors, and also View Schools, I remember, and like the others that are usually participating. Do you also, do you have like trouble getting sponsors, or do you, is it always the same?
I think we try to get sponsors all year long, because we already know what events are going to happen, of course. Okay. But usually about half a year before, I say, we really start making sure that that everybody is contacted and that we put out requests for sponsorships, and that we offer our last sponsors new opportunities to sponsor again for the coming year. Because as you said, well, you can imagine that organizing an event as Futures Amsterdam in Theater Amsterdam, indeed, those are large amounts, right? Other people, I'm not allowed to discuss numbers, but other people would buy a house from it, let's put it like that. So yeah, we're talking about large numbers that need to be covered somewhere, of course. And of course sponsorships are a big part of that. So we have been really, really blessed with sponsors from the tech industry, and also sometimes with outside the tech industry. Some of them approach us, of course, if they can sponsor. With a lot of companies, we have built a really good relationship throughout the years. Think of an AWS, Amplify, who has sponsored us for many years. Storyblock, Progress Software, even Microsoft supported us. So, yeah, we have had quite some great companies backing us up. View Mastery as well. Yeah, the list is too long. I don't have them all ready, but yeah, we're super grateful, of course, to all of these companies. Hopefully, we also bring add value to them. So it's not a one-way stream here. We really feel like, okay, you support us with financial means, but we also need to make sure that actually this is your marketing budget, right? So we need to figure out together how we hopefully give things back to you and how we make this worthwhile, because a company doesn't sponsor you every year if they feel like they're throwing money away. Hopefully we have really shown quite a lot of companies the added value of being part of our conferences and what we can do for you when it comes to spreading the word, employer branding, branding your product, these kind of aspects of sponsorship indeed.
And like you already in advance like planned like the speakers and the times and so on, but there are like how does it work like behind the scenes? Like all the people are sitting in the room, and of course there's probably a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. Like this person is next to present, and we have to prepare her with the audio, probably like a microphone and all of that. Like, how does it work? Like the speaker turnover.
So we have a dedicated person, or let's say in the most ideal situation, we always have a dedicated person who is aware of next speaker and goes pick up the speaker. The speaker itself always receives an email from me, usually. The day before or 2 days before, when exactly they can come and test their laptop and when their exact speaker slot is, also with the request then to be at stage 15 minutes ahead. But it happens sometimes that the speaker wasn't aware, or he got lost or she got lost, and that I need to go pick him up personally. It has happened more than once that people see me running through the venue because 5 minutes in front of before a talk, a speaker is not there yet. Knock on wood, so far we've always allocated the speaker, so we never had to wait actually for a speaker, but we have had some stressful moments, yes. But we always try to have a dedicated person that usually has an A4 paper or a clip-on board with a speaker, nice picture of the speaker, and their talk time. Because indeed, 10 minutes ahead, people need to go to the tech and get strapped in with a microphone and have everything checked straight away. And 99% of the time, speakers are in the back. So we have a VIP or a speaker area. VIP is a little bit too heavy of a word. We have a speaker area in the back where speakers can relax. They can still fix their slides. You don't want to see the stress on the speakers' faces 2 hours ahead of their talk. You see total panic faces. You see speakers that are completely relaxed, but at least that's a dedicated area where they can have rest and peace, and where nobody's disturbing them, and where they can do their thing still. And that's also usually where all the fun happens. Most are usually closer to the end of the day and on the Friday afternoon, and it's like 5 o'clock. There's already a little party going on in the speaker area. There is a dedicated area indeed for speakers, and we usually try to have a dedicated person who brings speakers to the stage.
Wow, that actually sounds a lot of fun. Have to see if I can get in there. I want to ask you when all of it is over, like the people storm out or go out on the last day, and people sweep up the dirt, and then what happens like afterwards? There is probably a lot of stuff happening afterwards, like making videos and stuff. Like, what goes into it after the conference ended?
Yeah, so indeed we have a pre-conference execution and post-conference part. Mm-hmm. That's how you basically can divide it up. Concept stage, execution stage, or concept planning, execution, and then post-conference, mm-hmm. I would say.
Okay.
So in post-conference, we're getting more and more organized by the year, but I think we have a good grasp on it by now. That indeed, we make sure that emails are sent out, requests for feedback, make sure that all of the videos get prepared. We make sure that all the speakers are looked after, make sure that they make their flights okay. One of my main tasks during these days is really making sure that, as well as attendees, but mainly also the speakers are really looked after. So make sure that they made their way to the hotel, make sure that the check-in went okay, make sure that the check-out went okay, because that's usually when the mistakes happen with the hotels, you know, that they still need to pay for stuff or something like this.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was actually covered by us. All these little things we try to cover. And make sure that they're being looked after until they're exactly home. I think you can divide that post-conference care still in the same topics. So sponsors, speakers, and attendees. And we have a short list of things that need to happen for each of those groups, basically. Make sure that speakers and sponsors receive a gift. Make sure they receive a thank you note, handwritten, or make sure that we ask for feedback. So I have big lists in Excel. Mm-hmm. Shortly, we started migrating everything to Notion.
Okay.
You know Notion?
Yeah. Yes.
We've used a lot of tools. So we have used Airtable. We have used Notion. I cannot remember all the tools we use, but I think at the core of the business, Google Sheets has been a driving force. And now we are migrating everything to Notion because I really like to work with it. So my lists in Notion are becoming endless cross-off lists and checklists, all divided in like almost like a complete company layout, because you could say that each event is like each time creating a little startup from A to Z again.
Yeah,
we always have our bookkeeping separate. We always have our mm-hmm. So we really have like a little bit of an entrepreneurial feeling when you organize an event, because each time you create something out of nothing.
Yeah,
and well, then you need to make sure that every time that's taken care of A to Z. I think it's more like what goes into aftercare. It's a super long checklist of emails, yeah, and letters and and bookkeeping and I don't know what else needs to usually be taken care of after our conferences. I'm sorry, yeah, I don't have like one answer, but it's
okay, like videos and taking care of the speakers and sponsors and so on. Okay,
yeah,
So that sounds like actually really interesting. And can you tell us what is your favorite part of organizing a tech event? Your very favorite part.
Ooh, I think each part, as I just said it, in pre-executional and post, has some charm. So I wouldn't point out one part, but there are a few favorites. I love to plan. So that's also that's also a little bit of my downfall, because I can sometimes write plans until morning dawn and not execute anything. So I always need to be aware of that a little bit for myself, because I like to make sheets. I love to make lists, and I can do that until it's too late. You know, that's a little bit that's a little bit of my personality. So that's for sure something that I enjoy, making sure that arrangements are being done with hotels, making sure that everything is arranged into detail with the theater. Those are really things that I get out of bed for in the morning, and that I like planning around, and make sure that everybody is well informed of where to go. That those are the things that I really, really enjoy. Then, of course, comes the execution. But during the execution, you're really being lived, usually. I don't know if that's a correct English expression, but you're so busy that you have barely time to think of what is happening at that time. That it's more like, I've always worked in hospitality, so it's more like an auto mode function than really purely enjoying those days themselves. Okay. Because you're so busy, you're just executing. I guess.
How much pressure do you have there, like shortly before and during the event?
I think it's more like a high alert level of things that are going on continuously, because those are the actual execution days, right? So you don't want anything, because that's where you basically have been planning for a whole year long. So everything that happens needs to go well in those 3 days. So I would say, yeah, pressure is high, but it's also a lot of things, because you know it inside out. It's a lot on auto mode, of course. So you know what needs to happen, you know where it needs to happen, but sometimes you're just too busy to really give it any thought. You try to plan as much as you can, but you cannot plan everything.
Yeah.
Right. So of course, when a speaker completely drops out, you have a few options, or make sure that you have backup speakers ready. And if that fails, make sure that you have some sort of time filling schedule for 25 minutes. To keep everybody in their seats, because everything has consequences, of course. You cannot just let people out of their seats and let them go grab a cup of coffee, because getting 1,250 people in and out their seats is a whole logistical nightmare, which needs to be well planned, as well as for the theater, as well as for us, of course.
All right. And can you tell us an anecdote of, like, what's your favorite memory you have from organizing tech events over the years? Like one memory that you say, oh, yeah, I really like this. There's probably so many.
You just asked me for my favorite parts, of course. So I would say that usually the Friday afternoon is one of my favorite parts, because that's where you feel the relief on people that are involved with organizing, people that have been speaking. You can feel the vibe coming up among attendees who are ready to finish everything up, so that you can really start looking back on a successful event and celebrate it with everybody together. I think my most favorite moments in the last 3 years is, again, not one specific thing. I think I truly enjoyed it that we built such a close bond with speakers that we basically went on mini holidays with them. And I think that's something really unique, and I'm really grateful for that, because we literally indeed went on holiday in Berlin and in Paris and in Barcelona. We went out together. We had dinners together. Nice. My task was to organize, and they were speaking. So we were all working, but not really working.
Okay.
I think it was pure about having fun together and just having a great time. So it never felt like work. I still don't really see it as work. If somebody would tell me, Jos, you can go to Barcelona for a week, but you have to organize two conferences in the meantime, I would do it in a heartbeat. I'll be gone tomorrow again, man. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Now, you mentioned, traveling here and there to Berlin, to Paris. Now, how did all of that change, all the event organizing, how does it change with the COVID-19? Like, now everything is digital, you lose a lot of touch with people, and what are some of the major points that are different than before?
Yeah, I think you can better ask indeed what isn't different about the current situation. So we are always in a learning curve, I think, or at least I have been lucky enough to be always been in a learning curve in my job. But I think especially in 2020, it has been exponentially exploding when it comes to learning new ways of conference organization. I'm a real people person, so it really goes to my heart when I cannot have that touch with people, which I have on a regular basis, which is almost completely gone, right? So you are very appreciative that people do digital claps, but it will never beat the feeling of getting an actual applause live on stage. And I think this will be the same for speakers. Nevertheless, it has been a very big challenge finding out a whole new of pleasant conference organization, which brought its own challenges, but also its own satisfaction. So now looking back on JS World, where we had 52,000 signups, well, that's amazing. And if you then see the compliments and the feedback online, as well as in the chats, well, that's basically where you do it for, and what gives you a good night of sleep, of course. But there are some human aspects that can never beat the in-person conferences.
I imagined that. I'm looking really forward to in-person conferences again, even though it was just like two. I have just been in two conferences, Futures Amsterdam being one of them, but I really enjoyed the experience, and I really want to get back to the in-person, because the virtual thing is like you're in front of the computer all day anyways, and it's like very unpersonal compared to the other experience. Like you can't,
of course,
just walk up to Greg Pollack and thank him for his nice courses, which I did in Vue.js Amsterdam, because I've been a fan of him for so long, and I learned Ruby on Rails with his famous courses, and I could see him in person, which is incredible. Like I can now, I can write him on Twitter, and he writes me a message back, and it's like, yes, not the same thing.
No, I have to admit, I've become a. I've always had an interest for tech, but I think in the last year I became a very technical person with all the tools I had to use and figure out how the whole streaming industry is put together. Don't get me wrong, there are for sure benefits in online events and virtual events. You can never compare it, of course, to going to a rock concert in person.
Yeah.
So I think that will always be the preference of people when you go in person somewhere. You also don't want to see a festival on TV, right? You wanna go there and you wanna feel it and you wanna see things. But I do believe that there has been that we have closed a massive gap of missing event features. And I think the hybrid event future is going to be very bright. I think we are going to see the ability for people to join these conferences who were never able to, and also people that maybe cannot afford it or that live in parts of the world where it's not always possible to travel all the way over here. I think for them it's going to be a lot more easier and a lot more accessible to be part of these events. So I think there are huge benefits to what has been created over the past year, for sure.
I think that's nothing, not thrown away time. You can implement it, as you said, in hybrid conferences. Okay, so I think we got it. Cool. Thank you very much, Joost, for your input and for the answers to my questions. And also,
you're welcome.
Thank you very much for taking space out of your busy schedule to be here on Decoding the Code. And
anytime.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Decoding the Code. A new episode will be available every week. So don't forget to tune in next Monday. For past episodes, check out the website, decoding.show.